You are listening to Bicycle Retail Radio, brought to you by the National Bicycle Dealers Association.
Welcome to another episode of Bicycle Retail Radio, brought to you by the National Bicycle Dealers Association. Thank you for listening. This podcast is designed specifically for the bicycle industry, dedicated to strengthening our retailers and cycling community. Today's guest is Sonia Loney, world champion professional cyclist, health coach, podcaster, keynote speaker, a current brand ambassador for 10 brands, as well as owner of company Moxie and Grit. She is one of the largest social influencers in mountain biking in America. She partners with brands to generate new leads, create content and credibility, and devise marketing strategies. Having raced in 20 countries and over 25 career wins and course records in 11 countries, she's one badass human. With a passion for marketing, branding, nutrition, and overall wellness of body and mind, this conversation should leave you ready to pop the lids off your social media marketing and take your content and credibility next level. Without further ado, I welcome Sonia to Bicycle Retail Radio. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh man, it has been awesome to watch your progression from athlete, brand ambassador, starting your own company, podcaster, and now a mother with, I think, another one on the way. Such a positive force. I mean, how's it just been? I can't imagine, a whirlwind.
Yeah, whenever you list off all those things, it seems like you're reading something about a different person, because I just feel like I'm just a normal person. And yeah, I just love learning and I love personal growth and I love challenges. So yeah, that's kind of what motivates me every day.
I just want to rewind a little bit. There's so much I want to get into, but how did you find cycling? Like, how did your passion develop for this awesome sport?
I think this is such a great question, because a lot of times we're asking, how do we get people into the sport? And often more specifically, how do we get more women into the sport? Because most people don't just go to the bike shop on their own and just buy a bike and start mountain biking. So for me, I actually was a runner and I ran a marathon. I think I was 18 at the end of high school, and I didn't really know how to train. So I started going to spin class at the gym, and that was my cross training to help me with my running injuries. And some guys from my work invited me to go mountain biking. And I thought, well, I've ran a marathon before, so I have the confidence from doing that. And I go to spin class, so I at least, you know, have some fitness. I guess I'll just dig this bike out of my parents' old shed and take it on this bike ride. So I went mountain biking for the first time. And the guys that I was riding with, they challenged me to do a race, and the race was in 2 weeks. So I said, all right, I'm in. And I started racing, and I basically was all in after that first race. And that was in 2003.
Oh my gosh, it's so addicting, right? And we don't know, everyone has this unique path, but I love that you're just like, yeah, I'll go do it. I'm all in. That's awesome. That's inspirational.
Yeah, I think it's like looking for opportunity and being open to try new things in your life, because a lot of times we'll put a limit on ourselves, like, I can't do that, or I'm too old to do that, or I'm not fast enough to do that. And we wait until the perfect time. And look at me, if I had waited until the perfect time, like, my entire life would be different. So if there's something that you're curious about, it's so important to just go after it and see what happens.
Yeah, such good words of wisdom there, for sure. Yeah, put those barriers aside that you make up in your head, because they're just really made up in your head. Your podcast, The Sonia Loney Show, is a top-ranked podcast. I was looking at the reviews last night and some of your guests. The content is just about living a high-performing life and, like you said, setting those boundaries aside. Can you tell us a little bit more about what your hope is for the listeners, you know, to walk away from an episode of your podcast with all your amazing guests?
Yeah, I started my podcast about 4.5 years ago, and I just wanted people to learn how to be better every day. And as a, you know, a high performance athlete myself, and as somebody who's done lots of different things in my life, there are some really key things to help you move forward, to help you deal with, you know, setbacks, to help you deal with like limiting beliefs and self-doubt. And the podcast, we have, you know, anyone from lots of different PhDs across lots of different fields to high performing athletes to just inspiring stories. And it's ideally just so people can see themselves in someone else's story, or just to hear some key takeaways that they can take into their day, whether they're applying it to bike riding, whether they're applying it to anything that they're doing in their life, so that they can feel more empowered and feel excited to get up in the morning.
I'm definitely, I hit follow, so I'm definitely going to be a fan and listen. There's some good things I already want to tune into. Nothing like doing a run, or, you know, just taking some moment to get some inspiration. But your work includes mindset coach, plant-based nutrition, health coaching, And I was on your website last night. Can you give us an idea of who your clients are? And are you still accepting new clients if someone wanted to reach out to you?
Yeah, my clients kind of range from anyone from executives. I do like some executive coaching. I work with professional athletes. And I also work with people that have like a chronic disease and their doctor told them, hey, you need to change your lifestyle, and they don't know how to change. And coaching is, it's interesting because I did a graduate level program on how to be a coach, because a lot of times you can just coach with no qualification, because I wanted to know, you know, from behavioral and health psychology, the whole process of how to help somebody find their best. And it's really about listening and asking questions and helping, not telling people what to do, but helping them get more clarity in what they're looking for and helping them feel more empowered to go after those things. So I work with lots of different people, and I'm generally accepting new clients. Yeah, like there is a limit to what I can take, but I love being able to help people. And that's what inspired me to do that. Is it used to be like, you know, I loved posting about my, you know, blogging about my adventures on the bike, because I wanted to inspire others to get out on a bike. And then people started asking me like, well, like, how do you do the mental part? Like, how are you doing? How do you do race at 18,000 feet with your bike? Or how do you ride? How do you race for 100 miles? Like, how do you not quit? How do you have fun? And the whole mental side of the sport became something that people always ask me about. So I decided to start doing more in that area. And then as, you know, I've gotten older, I'm 38, I'm a mom of almost two. I've been plant-based since 2013. And I feel really passionate about just overall health and well-being. And so like the health part, people started asking me about that. Like, how do I be healthier? How do I lose weight? How do I, you know, how do I feel better mentally, you know, the mental health side of things. So the coaching has been a great way to combine everything that I've learned over all the years through my bike riding and racing to all the other educational and projects that I've done.
I can't imagine that you could have foreseen like your life headed in this amazing direction. Like, it's just like, wow.
No, I did my master's degree in electrical engineering, and I thought that that was, you know, what I was going to be going to do with my life. But when I found mountain biking, I thought, well, this is a different door that I never even knew existed. And I really want to pursue this and see what happens. And I didn't know what the path would look like. And I know that the path moving forward, like, there's no way for me to predict what that's going to look like. But I think as long as you're like intentional about the things that you're doing and you're excited about the things that you're doing and you work hard and you're consistent, then a lot of things can happen for you.
I agree with that. Now, I know that you're focused right now on building a family, but are you still training and do you plan to get back to racing, or is that kind of just up in the air? Not quite sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely planning to get back to racing. It was really interesting because I had my first son in March of 2020. So the beginning of the pandemic, the hospital locked down while we were still in it. And I was able to train. And I mean, when you're pregnant, the training looks different than when you're not pregnant. But I was able to train until the day before he was born. And I was mountain biking until the day before he was born. And this pregnancy is the same. So yeah, like, being a bike rider is part of who I am, and being a bike racer is something that I love. So I'm really looking forward to getting back to racing next summer. I live in Canada now, so the whole restrictions at the border and everything made it really difficult to do any racing this year. So I'm super excited to get back because I love the community. I love, like, I used to race my bike because I wanted to win, and I still, of course, really want to win. But I love learning about myself. I love being able to help others, you know, through my own story and just the adventure part. So I'm super pumped to get back to that. But I know that there's going to be a bit of a humbling experience because it's been a while since I've raced, and I'm not going to be where I was whenever I, you know, stepped away to have a baby. So it's going to be a fun growth opportunity and a humbling opportunity to get back out there and rise back up to the top.
It's nothing like, you know, it's a great thing to push yourself. You know, I was an endurance mountain biker. I still am, right? And, you know, we have kids. Like you said, it's part of your soul. There's that time on that bike where you can truly tap into like all these things that make you just continue to thrive as a human and be better at your job too. I imagine that there's a lot of takeaways, you know, from hours on a bike that help you bring the best version of you to every conversation that you have. So I'm excited to see you're, you know, back out there racing, and, you know, I'm a fan of yours and have been for several years. So you've done so many great things for our industry and just introduced cycling to, you know, just a whole group of new people, women included. I know we've talked before just about women in cycling. Your company, Moxie Grit. So it's moxieandgrit.com. I was checking out. So athletic wear, very inspirational, short, motivational sayings around do epic shit and different cool things. great reviews on the products. How did that company come about?
Yeah, this is really interesting because, well, previously I worked in the bike industry doing sales and marketing. So I've been on that side of things. And then for my sponsors, I like being creative, and we were coming up with co-branded products that the companies would sell. And then I thought, well, I'd really like to just start my own. So I had some ideas, and I thought I'll figure out the manufacturing piece. I'll figure out the marketing piece. I'll figure out Shopify. This is also about 5 years ago. And yeah, I just said, let's see what happens. And it was actually profitable and successful straight out of the gate. So it's been really fun. And just to create products that people take out on their big adventure day, that makes people laugh or just makes them excited, a little bit more excited to be out there. Like, that's kind of the reason why I do it. And just also, it's so interesting because you'll think that somebody's really going to love a design, because I come up with all the designs, and some of them do amazingly well and some of them don't do well at all. And you're thinking to yourself, I thought this was going to be a huge success. I think this is hilarious and people don't like it. And then other ones, you know, people love. So it's, yeah, the land of retail, even guessing like what sizes to, you know, how many sizes you need and how the quantity of each of those, it's been a lot of learning.
I love your outlook though. You're just like, all right, let's just do this. We'll just go for it. I'll figure it out on the way. So I guess that's like the best way, just jump in. Cause I think in our brains, we put up all these reasons why we can't do something, right? And that will stop us before we even get started. So you just got to go for it and dive in. But yeah, the land of pleasing everyone, right? Like thinking something's going to rock. And this is someone's like, that's not funny at all.
Yeah, and I also think like being willing, like there's this quote, it's like, be brave to suck at something new, or even to suck at something period. Like we mentioned me getting back to racing. Like I think it takes a lot of courage to get back out there knowing that I went from being like at the very top of the sport to knowing that I might not be and probably won't be at the very top whenever I get back. And it's humbling to do that. And the same thing for like starting a business. Like many people listening, you know, you own your own bike shop and it's hard. And like you have high expectations and there's ups and downs, and it takes courage to keep putting yourself out there over and over and over.
Yeah. I mean, I know you spent with Ergon on a national level 5 years working with them on the sales and marketing. And in the course of that, you visited, I think, hundreds of bike shops, I'm sure, doing technical training and events, talking about retailers right now, putting themselves out there. I mean, the industry has just been really coupled with supply constraints and this incredible bike boom. What are your thoughts right now just on the industry in general?
Yeah, first of all, you know, my thoughts go out to everybody that owns a bike shop right now, because I know that it must be like, I don't own a bike shop, but I imagine it's been really hard because first, you know, the pandemic happened and you probably had to close your shop. And then all of a sudden you have this like massive boom of people wanting to buy stuff. But then the supply chain is so backed up, you can't actually get the product. So the demand is there and you have all these customers wanting to give you money, but then you don't have anything to sell them. So that must be, you know, very stressful and really frustrating at the same time. And I forget what your question was. Can you repeat that?
Just like looking at the industry as a whole, what are your thoughts? Just your overall impression? I think you just summed it up. You're just feeling like, wow, we're going to get through this, you know?
Yeah. Like optimism for sure. Like, you know, weathering the storm is hard, but those people, there's more people now that are interested in bikes, more people who are interested in, you know, buying more products and getting their families into it. So once the supply chain catches up, like there's a much bigger customer base and also an opportunity now, even if you don't have products, to help build community, because these new cyclists who are interested, or maybe they were cyclists in the past and they haven't picked up a bike in 20 years, like there's an opportunity to create community for these people, even if you don't have tons of stuff to sell them. And ultimately, you know, the bike world is a huge international family, and creating a space for people where they can connect with other people and where they can feel like they're a part of something, especially when they're new. Like, I think that's really powerful. And that also builds strong connections for whenever, you know, you have more things to sell them later, because they're going to be coming to you to buy that stuff because you've built that space for them.
Yeah. You know, I'm just thinking, you know, with all your experience with sales and marketing and seeing what you've done building your own brand identity, I'm often talking to retailers on being defined by who they are. So not the brands they sell, but rather who they are as retailers. And I'm looking at the work that you have done and just building a brand around yourself almost. Any tips for retailers, you know, about identifying the brand as themselves and not the brands that they sell inside their store?
Yeah, I would first ask, like, how do you want people to feel when they come in your shop? And like what makes you unique and why would somebody come to your shop over another shop? And everybody has their own like unique way of, you know, making people feel, or even just like the way that it looks inside your shop. What makes you unique and what are you trying to have your customer walk away with? And that goes so much further than what brands you sell.
Yeah, I'm looking at, so your experience with social media, you have over 40,000 followers on Instagram and the Facebook. And I just see your content is really engaging and really authentic. And I'm consistently having conversations with retailers on focusing on helping them improve their social feeds. You know, where do we start? Like in your opinion, you know, how does it start when we're talking about excelling online, be it your website, your Facebook, your Instagram? Is it a dedicated person or is it just a mindset shift?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll say that it's really challenging, the social media landscape right now. Like I grew my following really quickly when I first got on Instagram, but my following hasn't been growing. So I'll just be completely, I love to say, oh, I know I have all the answers. So it's been really tough. But I think that, again, going back to that authenticity piece and on social media, like people probably, even if you're like a dealer, they're probably not following you to just see pictures of products. They're probably following you because they're looking for information. They want to find a way that you can help them. So like you can use products and product placement and sell stuff to people, but how can you create a story around those products that brings value to the consumer? So like if someone's looking to buy some tires, like helping people figure out, well, there's lots of different questions about tires, like tire tread, tire pressure, tire size, like tire width, tire, you know, material, like maybe do posts about those types of things where you can loop in products that you sell so that you're bringing value to the consumer, but also, you know, you're building a relationship, but then they're going to come buy it from you. And you can do that with so many different things that you have in your shop. And maybe just make it about the lifestyle of cycling, because really cycling is about community. And if they're following you, they know that you're a shop, they know that you sell stuff. So you don't have to beat them over the head with that. It's like, how can you help them in different ways?
That's fantastic advice. And getting back to, you said you grew your Instagram so quickly. Is there anything that you think that helped you do that? Or, you know, just recently in a meeting, we were trying, you know, to entice retailers to just grow by 10 followers this week. I mean, something so simple, it should be more like hundreds, right? But is there any just tips you have just that are maybe simple to grow your Instagram base?
Yeah, being consistent with your posting is important, whether it be, you know, you schedule it. There's lots of online schedulers that you can use. Maybe that helps you put more thought into the content. I do kind of a mix of both. I do mostly posting in the moment, and I should be doing more scheduling because I know when I schedule it, I actually have more well thought out posts. But yeah, making sure you're posting consistently, and that doesn't have to be every day, but it should be like at least a couple times a week, and trying to contribute to Instagram stories, because I think that a lot of people use Instagram stories even more than they do looking at the feed. So just trying to put fun stuff up there, and it could be something interesting, even like, hey, like this is what it looks like behind the scenes at a bike shop. Like most people have no idea what that looks like.
Are there any other feeds that retailers should be focused on, in your opinion? I know there's like Meetup, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok. I don't even do the TikTok. I have no idea, but I didn't know it's out there.
Yeah, there's so many. I think that pick the ones that resonate with you, because those are the ones you're ultimately going to be connecting with. Like, I don't do TikTok either, and it's because I just don't like that kind of thing. So like, if I'm trying to force myself to do TikTok, but I don't like TikTok, then the content's probably not going to be very good. So like, pick something that resonates with you. If you have the capacity to do, you know, multiple things, that's good. Certainly right now, Instagram is probably the best way to go. And you can even engage with your customers of doing like, you could do like an Instagram live happy hour, or like an Instagram live, you know, maybe every week you have like a tech tip that somebody could do. And maybe another Instagram live is like you have, you know, a training tip for people, like just things like that, or like how to pack, or how do you actually wash your bike clothes so that they're not stinky when they come out? Like there's just so many different things, and yet you can do it in whatever way resonates best for you. If you're a video person and you love YouTube, you know, do that. But it's hard because it takes a lot of time to be creating all of this content. So to be expecting yourself to be doing it at a high level everywhere, that probably isn't realistic when you're trying to run a business, unless you have a full-time dedicated social media person.
Yeah. There's like so many hats the retailer has to wear, but I love that you're like, how to wash your clothes without them being stinky. It could like, it's kind of these offbeat topics that are like so unexpected that actually probably draw the most involvement and feedback.
you know, like stinky shoes, like, man, who's left shoes in their car, you know, and then your car reeks and your shoes. It's like, yeah, lots of things that are practical. Yeah.
So I often see you get tons of comments on your posts, and I just quickly went to your Instagram feed and I see that you actually respond to some of the comments and you're interacting. I assume that that's probably one of the keys to success that retailers should, if people interact with them, respond to the post. Would you suggest that?
Yeah. Like people want to feel like they have a relationship with you and that they know you, and that's why they're following you. So, and sometimes people have extra questions about something that you posted. For me, it's easy to do because I love interacting with people and I think it's really fun and I'm excited when people are asking questions and want to interact. But it'd be like a relationship. Like if someone came into the shop and started asking you questions and you didn't answer them, that would be kind of weird. So why would you ignore them online?
Yeah, totally. 100%. I'm like, when I see something posted, I'm like, please respond to that. You know, I call a retailer up. I'm like, there's a comment. Talking about cyclists, I'm sure, you know, you're very much in the public eye. I'm imagining you have new cyclists that reach out to you probably to ask questions or get your opinion. And as an industry, we're talking about the new cyclists that have found our sport or the people who have come back. How do we, any ideas that we could keep these new cyclists engaged just based off, you know, the questions that you might be getting or what you're hearing from people just getting into the sport?
I mean, there's a lot of different places I could take that. The first thing is just to make sure it's fun. Like cycling can be really intimidating for people. They might look in the mirror and say, well, I don't look like the people in the magazines, or I don't look like a cyclist. I don't look like an athlete. And they might not feel included there, or they might feel like pressure because they're not fast enough. And they're like, you know, they're afraid to go on a group ride because they're afraid they're going to get dropped. So like finding a way to just make space for everybody. And I think that that includes like being able to look around and see people that look like you. Because a lot of times in our advertising and in our media, it's like we put the typical like stereotype of what a cyclist looks like. And I think if we don't have a lot of different faces and a lot of different bodies out there, then people are going to feel excluded. So that's just one idea that I have. Another idea is, you know, demystifying a lot of the things around bikes. Like even if somebody is interested in cycling, they might walk into a bike shop and be completely overwhelmed because there's e-bikes, there's fat bikes, there's mountain bikes, there's different size wheel sizes, there's gravel bikes, there's road bikes. It's like, what bike do I even buy and how much money do I need to spend? And like, how does all this even work? So, you know, finding ways to create that, like lowering that barrier to entry and really like making people feel welcome when they come into a shop. And like, I'll tell you, I feel kind of like, I hope it's okay to say this, but you know, while I was even working in for Ergon and I would walk into so many bike shops, I was a professional bike racer. Like I'm well versed in this stuff. I'd walk into the shop and I would feel really unwelcome in the shop. I'd feel like, oh, everybody's measuring me up, or people wouldn't give me the time of day or be nice to me until they figured out like what my credentials were as an athlete. Like that needs to go. That weirdness of walking into a shop and not feeling included and welcome if you're not like fitting a quote normal, I don't even know what normal is, but fitting like a normal stereotype of the normal person that walks into the shop, like people want to feel good when they walk in. And how can you find ways to make people feel good? How can you hire people in your shop that are going to be outgoing and warm and make people feel welcome? Because that's ultimately how you're going to retain the customer. It's going to be the relationships that the customer has with the people that you have out on the floor, not only just what it looks like and what you're selling.
Have you heard of P2 groups and wondered what they are? P2 stands for the Profitability Project. And while profitability is at the focus of everything we do so much more. P2 group members share their expertise and their insights. They ask questions and they exchange resources to make sure every member is profitable and successful in every aspect of bike shop ownership. Reach out today so we can tell you more.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of the All Bodies on Bikes film by Shimano and how that did just so much to open up the word cyclist and create a more inclusive environment. And, you know, I was going to go into the, you know, we've connected before just on bringing more women into the cycling industry and where we're at now. I mean, how are you feeling, you know, with the current state of inclusivity? I mean, we've done pretty good work, I would say, but there's still a lot more that we can do. I feel, as you're saying, just opening up and finding better, you know, I don't know, staff that just, I don't know, you know, have that light or maybe are just more open to anyone coming through the door.
Yeah, I mean, change and improvement is slow, but overall, I'm optimistic. I'm also really happy with all the conversations that are happening around transgender athletes, the inclusivity that's happening at the event level, also, you know, with like Black athletes and other athletes from different races. Like, I think that there's a lot of really great conversations and things that are happening right now. But again, it's slow. But it's just having those in the top of your mind whenever you're making decisions and putting people in decision-making positions so that you can have a different voices and different opinions in the room. Having like the same voice and the same opinion, you know, just a bunch of different people with the same voice and same opinion might not actually be the best way to do things, in my opinion.
Yeah, you can get almost like in a little box, right? So we're encouraging retailers to communicate with your staff, let your staff give you their ideas so you can make your environment just more welcoming and open. You know, another thing I wanted to ask you, you know, all the work you're doing with coaching, nutrition, and mindset, I'm thinking just as we move through the industry and supply is scarce and brands go direct to consumer, we're working with retailers to think about the services that they offer cyclists coming in the door and how that they're adding to their journey as a cyclist. Do you feel like coaching or this nutrition mindset piece could be a service that retailers could offer in their stores as well?
I think so. I mean, it's very individual. So you can offer, like, you could have cookie cutter type of programs for people, but ultimately, I think that one-on-one coaching or even group coaching is going to work best for people. But everybody is going to have their own things that they're going to deal with. And also, not everybody wants to work on those things. Not everybody wants to hold up a mirror and say, what do I need to work on? So I think it really depends on who your clients are. And you could even find interest there by having like guest speakers come into your shop. Like when I worked for Ergon and after that, I created my own speaking series where I would volunteer to just go around to bike shops. And initially it's because I wanted to offer mentorship in the form of, you know, tire pressure, like I've used that example, or like how to get confidence back after a crash or things like that. And then it just sort of evolved into people asking more and more questions. So by doing like little things like that, maybe the shop already has ambassadors that you work with, involve them, find what your clients or your customers are looking for. And then maybe you can create or have somebody create some sort of custom program so that you can bring extra value to those customers.
That's a great idea. I'm imagining with your visits to all these retailers over the years when you were with Ergon that you saw many retailers doing many different things and many events. Is there a couple of things or something that stuck with you that kind of stood out to you as maybe something that a retailer did that could be, I don't know, something that other retailers could learn from?
It's hard to say. Like, I think just having events and like for community to come to in the evenings where there's like food and drinks and just fun. I think that that's really like, well, I personally enjoyed those. And I think that all the people that came to those do too. And maybe people are already doing that, but things that aren't just about biking, like not everybody is going to feel comfortable going out on a group ride. So having an event that people can come to, some people do women specific things, but I think also having events that aren't just women specific, but that make everybody feel welcome because not all women want to go to women specific events either.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea. Too often, like we focus, and not that the group ride is bad, but not everyone wants to do a group ride, right? It can be very intimidating. So doing something at the shop that doesn't involve, you know, actually getting on the bike, but maybe it's more educational content is a great idea to welcome people in a non-threatening way. That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah. Just having like there's going to be different people with different desires and just creating space for them.
So let me flip over to events. Did you go to Sea Otter like a month ago?
I did. That was my first trip since the pandemic. And it was the first time, it was kind of fun. It was the first time I left my son at home for more than one night, like not alone, but with his dad, my husband. And it was really fun. I loved being able to go. And I think it was really important to go to that. And it was actually a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be. I was expecting there to be a lot less people and a lot less, you know, bike industry there.
I heard that it was a really fun show. I didn't know, gosh, that first time away from your child, that's a weird moment, isn't it? It's a weird one.
It was weird because I think society tells you you're supposed to feel bad and you're supposed to be like, oh, I miss them so much. And yeah, I miss my son, but I was stoked. I got to go be me and just like have my time to myself. And personally, you know, like I work alone a lot of the time. I'm just working hard, trying to like connect with people, put content out there, train. And whenever you're not around your community for like 2 years, it can be really lonely and you can have these narratives in your head that aren't true. So it was nice to be able to get out and like see people from the bike industry and the bike community and reconnect with people. And that really put a lot of wind in my sails.
Yeah, there's nothing like, I love the cycling community. I love spending time. It's very empowering, you know, to walk away from an event and just you have all these ideas that come out of it. The conversations just spark all this energy. Were you there with the brands that you're working with now, or what was your role at Sea Otter?
Yeah, so I go as an athlete, but I work with a lot of different brands that are my sponsors, and we do different types of activations at the booth. And I did Continental Tires as one of my sponsors, and we did a group ride, and it was the biggest group ride turnout I've ever had. So it was really cool to see that many people wanting to go on a mountain bike ride. And it was all different ability levels, which as a ride leader can be really intimidating because you want everybody to have fun. But it was so cool. And it was actually like 50-50 men and women too. So just to see that level of interest was exciting.
Yeah, we at the MBDA had planned to go, but we just had our calendars were booked and there was so much going on that we put it off to April. But we were looking at all the feedback and the images and so many riders were there. Do you feel that retailers would benefit from interacting with events in their local community to, you know, I'm thinking of all the riders at the events just to make a more impression and as a means of promotion?
I'm not sure, because I was just trying to think about like in what capacity, like would you set up a booth there at something like Sea Otter? There's so much going on that you might, unless you have a really large presence, like it might not be worth setting up a booth there because you might just get swallowed up and everything. If you're there creating, I don't know, maybe you have your own customers and you create a space for them to come hang out at Sea Otter or like at whatever your local event is, that could be great. Or if the event is smaller, I think there is value in being at events, but also just getting a feel, like even if you don't have like an actual like booth or activation happening, if you're like somebody that is making decisions at the bike shop, getting out into different events, into different areas, just to see what it's like outside the shop, just to see like what the industry feels like, what people are doing. It helps you get a different lens on your work, and it might give you some fresh ideas on different things to try.
Yeah, just to get a pulse. You know, I'm talking with the team at SRAM at one of the recent CABDA shows and talking about their athletes that work with them, working with retailers. As a professional athlete that works with brands, do you sometimes, you know, work with retailers, or do you feel like that what might be a bigger focus for the year forward?
I actually really enjoy working with retailers, and in some of the proposals that I write to my sponsors, like there are options for the sponsor to like basically use me for, you know, activations or going to do a certain number of shop visits per year. Like I put that in there as a something to be available, but like they don't usually take me up on that. And I think that that would be something that would be great to be doing more of. Cause when I was doing it on my own and when I was doing it with Ergon, I think that that was really effective. And I really enjoyed it too, because I like meeting people outside of my own, you know, normal sphere and getting to connect with not only consumers, but bike shops. I think it's really fun. And you get, like I said, once you leave your little bubble, you get a really unique perspective and new ideas.
Yeah, we continue to brainstorm up these ways that retailers could just, I don't know, be the spark of something amazing or fresh or new. And I'm thinking of the way that we're working with brands and just bringing in almost this grassroots style of just a really awesome, amazing human such as yourself or another athlete can be really inspirational to people that have found our sport. And I think there could be something there that we have to, that we've done in the past and we, for some reason, we got away from, but we could get back to quite easily.
Well, I think it was easy to get away from whenever we weren't doing anything in person for so long. And there's still like a lot of restrictions. But I think whether it's a local person or whether it's somebody that you bring in, that can be something really effective and really exciting for people in your community. And like just another just note is like you might have to pay some people to come in to be, you know, people might not volunteer to just come in with their time and do that. And it's worth investing and bringing in people that are going to bring value to your customer and build buzz around your bike shop.
Yeah. At my store, we used to do we would just do seminars. We would bring in like running professionals to talk about your stride, and we might have to pay them, but the value add for our customers and that we were the source of this, you know, education was huge. So thinking of it at a different angle could go a long way. I agree with you.
Yeah. Or if like the team has a bike shop or the bike shop has a team or ambassadors, like write that into their contract. Like, you know, you have to come and do, you know, one or two events per year. Like that's part of the deal.
So staying there for a second, because many retailers, you know, we have these virtual events where retailers share what's keeping them up at night. And a conversation that came up recently was how to work with their local ambassadors, how to best do that, how to best execute working with their local ambassadors. being someone who is an ambassador, any tips for retailers, you know, when they're setting up what to expect from their ambassador, what would be, an appropriate ask, if you would, maybe?
It really just depends. I mean, it depends on what you're giving them or what you're paying them and what you ask for return. But I think that open communication with your ambassadors is really important, because a lot of times people that don't have the capacity to manage the ambassadors. So they'll have ambassadors, they'll give them or pay them or do whatever it is that they're doing. And then you just like don't hear from them. Or as an ambassador, I can say, like, with lots of brands, I'll reach out to brands and then they don't have the capacity to even use the content that I'm providing to them, because it's hard. So making sure that you have the relationship is give and take. It's not just like, here's all this stuff. It's like, well, how can we work together? Because we're a team, and the ambassador should view themselves as part of your marketing team, not just like somebody on the side. And the role of the ambassador is to help build community for you and to be out there, like making people understand like where you are as the bike shop, but also like making people feel good because they're representing you. And again, that comes down to being inclusive, being friendly, being open to conversations, and helping people as much as you can. So I think that communication piece, having even quarterly check-ins that you could schedule, is really important, because ultimately you're building a relationship. And if you had an employee, you wouldn't just hang out with them or have them come to work and just not talk to them about the work that they're doing. So I think the accountability piece is important as an ambassador, and ambassadors want to know if they're doing a good job or not.
That's fantastic advice. You're really making them feel part of the team and not an outsider, and letting them know what your culture is and what your expectations are. That's fabulous advice. I'm thinking about everything you're doing, and I'm just, you must be so busy. And, I can echo that with what I'm hearing from retailers with all the stuff put on them right now with purchasing and staffing and marketing. So many things to juggle. Any tips for someone who has a lot on their plate to prioritize? Anything that you've learned through your efforts?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get completely overwhelmed if you think about all the things that you have to do all at once. So try not to think about all the things. Come up with a plan where, like, it depends on how you want to schedule your time. But like for me, I have a calendar that I need my calendar, and I book time for everything that I do. I book time and I try to make it as single focus as I can. So, if I'm doing I'll try and make this more not just about what I do, but if you're doing marketing, make sure you're just doing marketing. Don't try and do like all the different hats in one day. Try and like pick an hour or a day or half a day to wear that hat so that you can be focused on that one thing. Otherwise, the work that you're going to put out isn't going to be as good, and you're going to feel overwhelmed doing it.
Yeah, it's like scheduling time, like between noon and one, marketing, and putting it on the calendar so you're not pulled and doing something else, like trying to, do some ordering at the same time, right? That's fantastic.
And I also think making sure your expectations are in line. Like a lot of us are just one person. Well, hopefully most of us are just one person. And if you expect yourself to do way more than you're capable of, or way more than you have capacity to do, or maybe you have the capacity, but doing that for a long period of time is going to burn you out, and that's not going to be good either. You might need to shift your expectations of what is possible. And I had to learn that for sure. Like when I had a baby and we had no childcare, and I still had to do all these things. So it's like, what is a realistic expectation of what my goal should be? And sometimes you can be hyperproductive and be doing tons of different things. And other times you just don't have the capacity to do that. So can you, have expectations and goals that are in line with what your energy and your ability to do something sustainable is?
Yeah, I'm thinking about, we had this leadership trainer who came to one of our retailer meetings, and he was like, sometimes you get stuck with all these tasks, and maybe if you lose sight of the goal, you just get so focused on the task that sometimes the tasks, they're not even important tasks. Like you can just take them off the plate,
Yeah.
All right. So 2023, any focus items for you? I mean, I know the baby is due soon, right? So professionally, back into racing, anything else?
Just continuing to grow all the projects and things that I'm working on. Super exciting and fun. And there's always that pressure when someone says, well, what else? It's like, well, I don't really need to add in anything else. It's just to continue to optimize and get better at what I do, and to just be there. And to for me, my biggest thing is to be out there in the community again next summer. Hopefully Canada won't be in lockdown and I'll be able to race and go to events and see people. And yeah, I'm optimistic about the future.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see you at Sea Otter. It's just, time is flying. I feel like even though we've been on this like almost standstill for the past couple of years, just it is like everything is just continuing to just unfold at rapid pace. And the industry is changing so much right now. Even events, I mean, I feel like if you're not registered already for everything next year, they're going to be like sold out and you maybe we'll get into them. I don't know. You see what Jeremiah Bishop is doing with the Impossible Roots. That's something kind of cool, right?
I actually haven't seen that yet.
Oh my gosh. So it's like, don't sign up for a race. It's just pick this amazing impossible adventure that you could tackle on your bike and go after it. And that is like your weekend, you know, that's like your escape for the weekend or your goal that you're working towards. You got to check it out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty. And then, you know, everybody can pick something that, like we're just talking about expectations and energy, pick something that is going to fit your life.
Yeah. Everyone has a different goal that we're, you know, the term impossible looks different for everyone, right? So you choose your own impossible. I guess outside of cycling, we can also just put that in life, right? Everyone who's listening should choose something that they think is impossible right now and realize that it's actually not. Like once you put your energy there, it's pretty damn achievable.
Yeah, that was kind of the thinking with the Do Epic Shit Sock that with Moxie and Grid. It's like that saying might mean something completely different to the person down the street. Like that might be pedaling a bike for the very first time or going out on a walk with your kid in public for the first time. Whereas somebody else, like that might mean something totally different.
So are you working with retailers in any capacity now? Or if a retailer listening to this wanted to contact you for help with marketing or branding or just general questions, what does that look like?
Right now, oh, you mean like just for like consulting type of work?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something I'm open to. It's not something I'm regularly doing. In the past, I actually did have a marketing consulting business that I worked with retailers. It was called Magnetic Branding, and that was about 8 years ago that I had that on top of things. So if someone's listening, they're like, yeah, I'd love to pick your brain. Like I'm open to that, but it's not something that I'm like actively pursuing.
Gotcha. Would you share your contact or what's the best way if people want to learn more about you? Should they go to your website or how would they go about that?
Yeah, my website is sonialooney.com and we relaunched a brand new website this year and that took like 6 months, but I'm really proud of the final product because when you do lots of different things, it's hard to be able to show people an easy way, like all the different things. So yeah, I'd love to connect with you. If I said something that, you know, resonated with you, I'd love to hear about it. If I misspoke about something, I also would love to hear from you because I'm always learning and growing too. And I think everybody, like we're all doing awesome. Like it is hard. Like all the things that we're doing are hard. Life has been challenging lately. And if you're showing up, if you're doing your best, if you're being consistent, it doesn't have to look perfect. It doesn't always have to look like growth, but just little bits every single day. Those daily actions are what define you. And I think that we're all just doing great because it's hard. And I just don't want people to feel alone. And I want people to feel seen that we're in this together and that, yeah, just showing up is the most important part.
I love that statement. So many retailers every day are, you know, we're hearing it's a struggle to go to the store, to turn the light back on, to tell people your bike's delayed, staff, you know, is leaving or moving on for whatever reason. There's a lot of things right now, and it's easy to get down. It takes strength and resiliency to keep yourself up. And I'm so thankful that you came on the show today to share that message and, you know, that positivity in community that our bicycle industry is. And we all have each other, right? Like, I mean, how many times has the network just been here for you? Like I felt it before.
Yeah. And along the lines of, you know, struggling to stay positive, it's like, what can you write? Can you write down what your daily win is? It could be the smallest little thing, but if you're always focused on the negative, you're always focused on all the things that aren't going well, then that's going to be what you start scanning the world for. And that's what you're going to be. That's going to be your reality. But if you can even look for the smallest little thing going well, it doesn't mean you're ignoring all the things that are hard, but it helps you look for things that are going well. And there's a lot more things going well for us than we realize, especially because we have this negativity bias.
Such great advice. Thank you so much for coming on and taking time out of your day to share your story and share some insights with our listeners. Really appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right. So that is it. I invite you to connect, come on Bicycle Retail Radio, share your story with our listeners. Head over to the MBDA website. There's lots of great webinars and member networking meetings up ahead. If you'd like to support the show, don't forget to subscribe. Share your favorite episode with friends. We appreciate your support. Thank you for listening. And with this, we go.
This has been Bicycle Retail Radio by the National Bicycle Dealers Association. For more information on membership and member benefits, join us at nbda.com.